Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Rader going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, track and field will be well represented at this week's NCAA West prelims. We'll tell you who qualified. But we're going to start with baseball. We'll spend most of our time talking baseball today. As the Red Wolves were in Montgomery last week, competing at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament for the first time since 2021. Fell short to Georgia Southern in the opening round by the final score of 13-8. Season comes to an end, but a very encouraging 2025. And here to talk about it with us, the head coach of the Red Wolves, it's Mike Silva. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing good.
You know, even in that loss Tuesday, and we talked about it after the game, down 10-1 in the third inning. Look, the very next inning, you had the tying run at the plate in the bottom of the fourth. Your guys just kept fighting, didn't show any signs of quit.
I think it was microcosm of our season, you know, just learn how to compete, learn how to fight, learn how to continue to play the game regardless of what the score is. And, you know, really proud of their effort. I think we got everything this team had in them out of them, especially the way that we started and all the adversity we faced, and always be indebted to that senior class just for their effort to get us back to respectability. And I think you can see the light at the end of the tunnel now, and so excited for the future.
At different points, especially early in the season, I remember there were times we were sitting around talking, and a couple of things you said that stuck out to me. One was, like you said, early on, you're like, if they gave a national championship for practice, we'd win it.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the effort level you get from these guys. But another thing you said was that, you know, there are times where they'll get down a couple of runs early in the game. You look around at their reaction to that, and you said, did I miss something? Like, did something really, real bad happen that you missed? Then you fast forward to things like you mentioned, getting down, even in Montgomery. We talked last week, early in the year, there's zero chance this team is winning that Sunday game against Troy, given the circumstances of losing the two heartbreakers and getting down 3-0 on game three. When did you see these things start to turn the other way?
I mean, just slowly but surely. Either way, we were 3-9 and couldn't beat the worst team in the Ohio Valley Conference. We got run ruled by them. And hats off to my staff, too, not just the players. I mean, everybody just showed up and went to work every day. And when you really buy into the process, you don't know if guys are really bought into the process until you're falling on your face. Because that's when you show your true character and your makeup. And they kept showing up and kept working and took hard coaching. Because, like you said, there was times in the dugout, when you take over a place, you really don't know until you get into the trenches, into the fire when the season starts. And especially guys that aren't used to winning. And so I think it was just a continuation. Just every day I felt like we would get like a little bit closer, but it didn't really click and get all together. But they started fighting for each other. If you're in the dugout, I always call it championship vocabulary and championship response, maybe not championship outcome, but that's where it starts. And you started to hear them using the right vocabulary and having the right response to positive moments and negative moments. And yeah, the Troy game was really, I was probably one of my proudest moments, that and then going on the road to UL and winning that series, because we had to have it, because there was no quit. There was a lot of fight. And, you know, I like to think that's kind of my personality, and I enjoy the challenge of building programs, and it gets fun when you know you got them. And I don't remember, my wife would probably know, we lost a game and I came home and I said, we got them. We got them. We're going to start going a little bit now. And I can't remember the exact day. She probably can. Mm. And I told the staff that, and they were all down after a game. I said, we got them. And they're like, how do you know? I said, I don't know. I've been doing it long. We got them. They're in. We're going to be fine. We're going to get going a little bit, and this thing's going to get a lot more fun. And then we started to go a little bit, but it just showed up and worked every day, regardless of the outcome. And that's the hardest thing to do. Everybody rides that wave of emotion every day, and you just really can't, not in our game, because it is a roller coaster. That's for sure. And it was this year, really, from start to finish.
26 wins overall. That's the most since 2019. Also, the most wins ever by a first-year head coach in program history. Most conference wins for an A-State team since 2018. When you look back on everything, is there something you're most proud of from year one?
Well, I didn't know that was the most in history. I wanted to make history, and I think that's one of the things that attracted me to coming here. I thought there was an opportunity to do something that maybe people didn't even really know was possible. And so that was step one. I just feel like if we got to take the momentum that we generated and continue to go. And then just the thing I'm the most proud of is I felt like as the season progressed, our interest level and momentum, and there's a little bit of a buzz around town. And I think people started to believe, but you have to give them, I used to tell our kids, you know, we're in the entertainment industry. You have to give them a reason to come back. And early in the season, we had a couple of decent crowds and we laid eggs, you know, and then once we started to get going again, I thought the Georgia State series was really important. There was a little bit of a buzz. And I remember when Jake hit the home run to right late, like it was the first time since I've been here that I was like, okay, like you can hear it. You can feel it in here a little bit. Like there's a little bit of electricity in the ballpark and our kids could feel it. And then I don't really know that there's a specific moment. I mean, we had a 3.37 team GPA and that was a battle early in the fall. And there was a lot of guys that were going home early from practice because they weren't really taking advantage of those things. And so I just think everything in general, I feel like we were finally operating the way that you need to operate towards the end of the year. And, you know, you could see that light at the end of the tunnel. So, and the thing I'm the most proud of is getting those seniors to the conference tournament. That was my only stress, really. Like, that's the only really heavy, and it was heavy because there was a lot of times this year you didn't know if it was going to happen. And it was going to hurt me, like really hurt me, if Will French didn't get a chance to go play in the conference tournament. And the guy probably be in the Hall of Fame here at some point in the future. And to think that you have that type of career and his selflessness with the group. That young man did everything I asked him to do, and that's not an easy thing to do, and he didn't have to. And I think that that was probably – seeing him and his dad when I was walking on the field of Lafayette, I wasn't emotional at all. I was just kind of – and then I saw that, and it hit me. I got up to talk to you, and, like, I was a little choked up. I mean, it was real emotion from a dad and his kid that are from here, live here, invested in this community. He's probably going to be here the rest of his life and a big member of our community. And just to see that joy – that's what you do it for. I mean, that's a special moment. I'll never forget that. I was walking out and they just happened to be to my right. And it was real emotion. And just to see people that were that invested and they accomplished a goal that I bet there was a lot of moments in the last few years that he didn't think was going to happen. And so that, I'm really proud of that.
Well, for Will, for Daedric Cale, Kaysen Tollett, all those guys. But I thought it was so cool. Will finally gets to the tournament and he homers in his first at bat the other day.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can't be romantic about baseball, right? Like, it's wild. I mean, just the moments. But you have to get to that stage to have those moments. And then I know we didn't have the outcome we wanted, but just the fight they had. And, like, I was really proud in that conference tournament game just because, rewind a couple months ago, like, there's no chance that we got the time running the plate. And then even in the last inning, when, like, two outs, and here we go, we're going again. And so just the growth and development of our guys, I was really proud of that.
Because, you know, Will grew up here, and we've seen him play his whole career here. We knew he came and played short, moved over, and, you know, really had found a home at second. He told us before the season started that you guys had done some work, even at corner outfield spots, if the situation arose. But you go to Jacksonville State, and you get a run ruled on Friday night. Sitting at the hotel, you kind of get, I guess, I don't know if you come to your room, make a phone call, but just talk through that decision to say, hey, what about first base, Will French?
I'm different than probably a lot of coaches. I think that's arguably one of your most important defensive positions on the field. And all the really good teams I've had, we've played that at a really high level. And we just weren't. And that's the truth. And so I'm looking around. I'm like, I need my best guys handling the baseball the most. And besides the catcher and the pitcher, that position touches the ball the most. And so we made the move. We got swept. We were a lot more competitive the next 2 days. Two games got away from us. But I don't think there's any chance we make it to the conference tournament if he doesn't make that move. I'm actually 100% confident that doesn't happen. What he, not just moving over there, but the way he played it.
Oh, yeah.
He played it like it was his idea. And, you know, when I called him and asked him, he said, you don't call me. I've already told you I don't care what position. I don't care where I hit in the lineup. I just want to keep playing. And so just really proud and thankful for that type of selflessness. And when a player of that caliber does that for your team, there's nobody else going to be knocking on my door wondering why they're playing where, why they're hitting where. You know, because then I took him out of the leadoff spot, which he didn't do anything to lose that spot. But I needed more productivity when we had guys on base and putting Ashton, way he can run at the top of the lineup, and then putting him behind him, and then all of a sudden, you know, we had a lot more opportunities to score runs.
Philosophically speaking, you said maybe you think more about or differently than some coaches do, but to me, I mean, I get it, because if your first baseman can catch it, how many errors is he taking off the board?
Oh, I mean, it was countless. Every night, I pay attention to that stuff. Every night, he was making, even if he wasn't hitting that night, he was making plays for us. I mean, you kind of got a little bit spoiled at times because you were surprised when he didn't make every outstanding player, every pick, and there wasn't many of them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just, you know, like I said, it's a player's game. I mean, it just is, and you have to have unselfish players, especially when you're trying to flip a thing like we're trying to do here. And for him to do that, I thought it just sent a message through the locker. I'm like, hey, whatever it takes, we got to get this thing done. And so hats off to him, and hats off to the other guys that I took out. I mean, I took guys out of lineup. They're used to playing every day, and they just showed up to work every day and picked up their teammates. And it wasn't about the individual. It became about the team at some point. I don't know the exact day, but I felt like, okay, they're in. Like, here we go. We're going to get going a little bit. So really proud of them.
I want to talk about pitching, because even going back into the fall, you had some good arms, mm-hmm. but there was a major emphasis to limit the number of free bases, and your guys really bought into that. They did a great job at throwing strikes, and you end up finishing top 20 in the nation in ERA this year. I'm sure you felt confident this pitching staff could be good, but to be top 20 in the country in that category, did you see that coming?
I thought that was going to be our strength. I really did. I didn't know how to use them all. We were moving guys around different roles, and I thought that would take a little bit of time. It has to kind of happen naturally and organically. But, I mean, yeah, I told them early on in the spring that you guys are going to have to carry us. And, you know, Cody Livingston and I have been working together for 4 years. We've worked together a total of five in our careers, and he was there on day one at Nichols when we got there, and he does a really good job, and we work really well together. It's kind of like he knows, we've been together so long, I know where he's at, and he knows what I'm thinking. And yeah, we just kind of went to work, and we really felt like we just had to do a better job of putting guys in positions to be successful and not ask too much of them early so they could get some confidence, because confidence is king really in anything in life. And once they got confident and pitching in a variety of roles, kind of like Swiss Army knives, they developed an identity as a staff. That group became really close, and they took a lot of pride, and we kind of got guys in and got guys out a lot this year, and then recycled them the next day. And as you continue to have those successful outings, your confidence goes up, and then you get an identity. Like, they thought they were pretty good, and they were, you know, so it was outstanding.
That's the thing that's cool about it, is that you put those numbers up, and especially after you lose Hibbard, there was never a night, I think, that you probably put a starting pitcher out there that you thought was getting you through seven. That was not the deal. And so knowing that, you were still building the way those guys just kept producing.
Yeah, well, it takes pressure, I think, off of them too. Just go do your job for however long that is, an inning, two innings, three innings, four innings, whatever it is. Just do your job and then pass the baton off to the next guy. They did that, and they did it really consistently. It was unfortunate. The conference tournament was really, they were out of gas. And losing Hibbard, I thought we'd make a run in the tournament. I thought when we lost him, it was going to get really tough, just because you're recycling guys a lot faster. And then, yeah, we moved Gallagher to the rotation, but that also takes a piece out of your bullpen, and then you have the injury. And, you know, Jack was the one guy that would go out there on Sundays when you were a little bit thin and give us a lot of length. And when you take that out, he was the one guy that was getting us deep into games. It started, the other guys, I felt like, started to get taxed, and we didn't have a chance to give him rest because we were trying to make the tournament.
All right, you mentioned Jack. So we really haven't talked about everything that went on with him. He gets injured in the second inning of the game at Southern Miss a few weeks ago. Shut down his season. So what's the future look like for him?
Surgery, I think, next week. Maybe next week or the 10th, whatever. But he's got surgery coming up. And then you start the rehab process. You don't really know till they get in there. I mean, we have a pretty decent idea. If it's total reconstruction, you're looking at about 10 to 12 months. If it's, you know, an internal brace, you're probably looking at 6 months. And, you know, so he might lose next season too. And basically what I told him was, we're not going to rush you back to lose you again. Like, we're going to get this thing done right and give you time to get back to be 100%. His future is going to be really bright. So he was crushed. Obviously, we were crushed. But now he's turned the page, and he's just excited to get this thing fixed and start to get back on the road to recovery.
As best you can, like, put to words kind of the emotional gut punch that is. Because obviously you got a whole lot of game you still got to navigate through. But the way that thing unfolds, when a guy throws a pitch and kind of looks at you in your head, like, you know what the end result of this probably is.
Yeah, because he's tough as nails. That guy wants the ball all the time and never wants out of the game. And so when I knew something was bad. He's just not that type of player. And then he was so optimistic afterwards, like, I feel fine. I think I'm going to be good to go. Like, I was like, you're not going next week. We got to get this thing checked out. And I kind of thought his season was over at that point. I was hoping for some positive move. At that point, you're thinking maybe it's a flexor or something like that. He's probably still done for the year, but that rehab process is a lot different. Yeah, it was tough on our team. You know, that game got away from us after that. It was emotional. Proud, yes, because the guys were emotional. They just lost somebody. They knew how much he meant to our team. We wouldn't have got where we got to without what he did for us this year. And then for a young man like that to be playing that big of a role. and then you lose them, yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. And so, but I thought we responded after that. I mean, that game got away from us, and then just the emotion of it. And then even for him, though, I mean, he was a great teammate. He was picking guys up. He was in the middle of it still. And to see that growth and the maturity from a young man, I think he can be a leader of our staff in the future. And so that part was really positive because you see how he responds to that type of adversity.
And one more thing about the pitching. You just had such a good balance with the guys that you brought in from Nichols, Gavin Galley, Jack Nelson, Chase Richter. They set such a good example of what you wanted from your pitching staff. And then you're mixing in freshmen in the starting rotation on the weekend, like not only Jack Hibbard, but a Tyler Weimer, who I know you feel has a really high ceiling as well.
Yeah, he does. I think he's going to play professional baseball. I really do. He just, again, you talk about making that jump from high school to this level, and you got grown men on the field. I mean, I kind of thought about that the other night. I was watching a high school game, and you're watching it, you're coming off the conference tournament, and just the physicality and the size, the intensity, the speed of the game, and the amount of stress that you're under, there's really no way to prepare them for that. I thought the guys from Nichols did a really good job really reinforcing the message to the guys. It's not about, like, I'm not really a results and I'm going to wear you out because you didn't get everybody out. I just want you to go out and compete fearlessly. But those guys from Nichols, they all grew. Galley wasn't Galley. If you saw his development over 4 years, it was tremendous. Jack Nelson, this is the best year he's had. He's really in the unselfishness, right? Took him out of the rotation. And those guys don't get wavered. I put Galley in the rotation. They don't get wavered. Where, like, with Maloney, when I took him out, I think he kind of looked at it as, like, I'm failing. And I looked at it as, hey, we're going to put you in a better position to be successful, because he was trying too hard. He just couldn't emotionally try to do less. And then, like, Richter, everybody watches him here. He wasn't good. 2 years ago, he couldn't pitch for us. Last year, until the last month of the season, he wasn't ever pitching for us. But he showed up and worked every day. And I think them just constantly reiterating that message, just show up and work. Just show up and put the work in. Keep working. They communicated that message in a really positive way to the locker room, that if you just keep showing up, like, I wasn't this guy before. And I think the development here is going to be key. And that's why, you know, having Cody with me is so important, because we're not going to get all the turnkey blue chip five-star guys here. We're not, but we can develop guys into that. And you saw that with Richter and Galley and those guys. And so that part's positive. And I think it builds confidence with the rest of the guys. Hey, I can become that good as well.
Richter, like, just strikes as that guy that if he's unavailable, you're just going to have to hide his glove. I mean, you know, he threw the 75 pitches on Friday night against Troy and went through the graduation ceremony on Saturday. And I was asking him, I was kind of kidding. I was like, are you going to try to convince him to be hot tomorrow? And he's like, I'm going to try.
Yeah, he's in my office. Him and Galley both are in my office. And, you know, he's like, Coach, I'm good. And I said, Chase, I'm not going to use the language you use. He's like, I'm good. And then he stormed out of my office to the locker room, you know, and he's got his spikes on. He's warming up. And that's the type of players that you want. I mean, I always say the greatest compliment you can have as a coach is when your players are so bought in, they're willing to put themselves in harm's way. And then on the flip side, as a coach, your job is to protect those guys from themselves. And I would have used them. It would have had to be like one out late or two outs late, because I thought they'd earn the right to get the ball in that situation. But, you know, thank God we didn't have to, and those other guys stepped up.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Continuing to visit for a few more minutes with A-State head coach Mike Silva. Our Second to None podcast brought to you by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. Check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Now, we talk about the seniors. Only six seniors went through Senior Day. You've got another seven players that are listed as seniors that, because of the junior college rules and being able to get those years back, I know are expecting to come back now. So how does that kind of change things for you going forward as far as constructing the rest of this team?
Yeah, it's a good, bad problem to have. I mean, you go out and recruit all year and you have all these guys, and even some of the younger guys that we had on our roster, you know, you're going through exit meetings, and I'm pretty transparent with them. I feel like if you're not honest with them, some of the guys we shipped off to go play somewhere else, and maybe one day we'll get them back. But it wasn't that I wanted to get them out of our program. It was that there's no way with all these guys. I met with all those guys about midway through the season just to kind of get their pulse. And then obviously exit meetings when we got back into town. And it was unwavering. They're bought into what we're doing. They all wanted to come back. And those guys could hit the portal and test the open market. They have no interest in doing that. I mean, they didn't even say, I want to get in. So that was really great to see that, because that means the guys are bought into what you're doing. They're excited about the future, and they can see that we can really do something special. And then the flip side stinks, because I thought we had some young arms that were going to be really good, and there's just not going to be innings for them. And welcome to college athletics in 2025. So I sat them down and just trying to articulate to them that, like, you didn't do anything wrong, but I'm not going to – you can't sit here and just waste away if there's not going to be innings. And I could just stockpile them like everybody does, but – I always feel like when you do that and you're not putting what's best for the player first, I think that you really can lose credibility and trust in your locker room. And so a lot of them, we're helping them get to a place where they can go make an impact. And the ones that will go to a lower level, I'd like to get them back hopefully at some point if they go and develop. But like I told them, I'm not telling Jack Nelson and Chase Richter and Gold Turner and Jelly and those guys that they can't. I mean, I'd be an idiot, you know, like – I'm not telling them they can't come back, and they understood. But it's even watching high school games right now, and we have a bunch of high school kids coming in, and I'll continue to recruit high school and junior college players. I really don't want to make a living with my whole team out of the portal. I just don't think – I think chemistry matters. Mm-hmm. I think you see some teams that are really talented across the country, even some that we beat that I thought were way more talented than us, but they didn't have that continuity. I mean, playing with guys that you care about for a school that you believe in and getting some of that pride in there, like, I don't know what that's worth, but it's always been worth a lot to me. I want guys that want to be here, and so it was a shot in the arm for us, for those guys to want to be here and want to come back.
You naturally went where I kind of want to ask you, this is more of the 30,000-foot view, but you know, you are in a sport where JUCO is so prevalent. How's it going to impact high school recruiting?
Yeah, it's going to disappear, unfortunately. I mean, I'm still going to recruit high school kids, but the high school kids have got to come in and have perspective. And most high school kids and their parents, it's really hard to do that. And it's not a knock on them. Everybody wants to be critical of them, but nobody loves anything more than they love their child and they want to see them have success. You have to be patient, because the physicality, you got grown men, they're 24 years old, 25 years old, 26 years old, potentially in your locker room, they have their own children. And so some 18-year-old kid coming in, but look, good players are good players, and I think sometimes everybody tries to kind of make it harder than it is. A good player with elite ability is still a good player with elite ability. There's guys that are 35 years old in the major leagues, and there's guys that are 20 years old playing in the major leagues, and they're all competing at a really high level. And so I think you go look at our roster this year, I mean, probably our best player was Ashton Quiller. If you go look at it, he's probably our most impactful player. And I love Will. He was outstanding, but Ashton played center field as good as anybody in our league. He led our team in hitting. And when he started to go, our season changed. And he was a freshman. And he was hitting .81, but a month and a half into this thing. And so when you bring those guys in, you have to create opportunities for them. It's easier when they play premium defense at a premium position. It gets harder for some of the other ones. But again, I think that the older guys in that locker room, the job they did with him was tremendous. I think everybody knew if he gets going, we're going to have a chance. And so with a lot of the young kids, I need our older guys. You know, when I played in early in my career, you had hazing and all that stuff and making young players uncomfortable. And I think one of the things that our older players have done a great job and will continue to as long as I'm here is when those young guys come in, put their arm around them and say, hey, man, like, I'm going to help you get there. And I'll take it a step further. I was watching Drew Gardman the other night, and he's committed here already. And Patrick Enskov showed up to the game to watch him. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to help him. Like, I know this guy can help us be better, and I'm going to help him. And I want to see him move around and what he needs, and I'm going to help him in the weight room, I'm going to help him on the field. And, like, that's awesome. Like, that's really special. And so I didn't ask him to go. I was at the game, and he just shows up. And he's like, I just wanted to watch him because he's going to be my teammate, and I want to make sure I can help him help us as soon as possible. And that's pretty special.
Especially if two guys that essentially play the same position.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm telling you, if you're trying to build a championship culture, so last year I had Caden was my number one, and my number two was a really good player for us, and my number three was a really good player, and they were all catchers. Their parents pulled up RVs. They were all best friends, and the kids were best friends, and if it becomes about the team, then they're still close. I mean, my backup catcher from last year showed up here multiple times with his family for weekends because they're so close with Caden's family. And he's done now, and he's working and all that stuff. But, like, that's pretty
– wow.
Yeah, it's pretty special, you know. And so hopefully we can continue to develop that here.
Yeah, and you just got good leadership right now. And you mentioned Patty Enskoff. He's one of those guys. Cade Namundson. And then you got some other guys that are going to be seniors this coming year. Cason Campbell, Jake Henry Williams, cross jumper. Going to be really exciting to see what Ashton does as a sophomore next year. You've got a good core here.
We have the core. We have to get more firepower. I mean, we do, and they know that. I'm pretty honest about that. And, you know, cross the season he had, the thing that's, it's great, the progress that he made. But like I told him the other day when we met, there's a whole nother level for him now that he's confident. Now it's like, I think the best is yet to come. Patty, if you watch his development through the course of the season, he hit just under 300 with 9 homers and double-digit doubles. And they're unselfish. They're really team caliber guys. They're high character men. And they are men. They're growing up now, and they're bought into what we're doing. And so I think that with the guys that we're going to bring in, they're going to set the tone as far as the expectations. But also, those guys are going to feel welcome because we need their help, and our guys want to go a lot further than we went this year. And I do too. I'm glad everybody's excited, and I'm happy with the progress, but I'm not close to satisfied. I mean, I don't want to be cheering the playing game in the future. I'm not going to be satisfied until we're sitting on Monday. It's a selection show, and I'm not going to be satisfied until we're sitting in a room seeing our ticket get punched to the NCAA tournament. And so those are the type of guys I want to come and play here. And if that's not what they want, then I don't want them to come play here.
He mentioned, you know, Enskoff and the sort of leader he was. And I actually was the day we were in the long rain delay for the Sunday Georgia State game, was talking with his dad, who a lot of people know was, you know, a college athlete in the state as well. And realized, he said, yeah, he's never really played very much shortstop in his life until this year.
Yeah, I didn't bring him in to play short. I didn't. He was just our best shortstop. He's a tremendous athlete, and we needed more foot speed, and we needed somebody that had that type of energy, has the personality to do it. And that's a lot to ask of somebody that hadn't played a bunch. But also, it wasn't by accident that when I found out he was on the open market, he's an Arkansas kid. We're not selling a ton of history and tradition. And I hammered that home, you know, because he had other schools that were beating his door down in bigger places. And I remember when we were on the phone, I was at the embassy and he was out west playing the summer league. And I said, Patrick, you're from Arkansas. And he got silent. And I said, you're from Arkansas. You can make a huge impact here. I need guys like you to want to come back home. I get it, man. This is probably not the sexiest program right now to look at transferring to, but I told him this is going to be the best decision you ever made. And he told me when we were in exit meetings, he said, I'll never forget that. He said, this is the best decision I ever made. I love it here. I'm proud to be here. You know, I believe in what we're doing. And because it is a recruiting spiel, but I believed it. He had that high character, high motor. I knew his coaches he played for. He just needed an opportunity to get on the field, and we had a need for it, and he was outstanding for us.
All right. We talked about how the fans started to buy in as the season went along. The crowd started to increase, especially there at the end of the year, have really started to create a fun environment. And I think when people are out at Slayton Family Field, they see the improvements. The turf looks great. Scoreboard looks amazing. But I know we're not done. What's the next step in that process?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully a player development facility before needed to probably start yesterday. I mean, you know, you get off to a bad start and it's hard to get on the kid. We weren't prepared. You know, they wanted to go play, and they were preparing hard and practicing hard, but we didn't have a place to really go get ready for the season. I mean, we're practicing an indoor football facility. We're still running around. We didn't get on the field full time until 2 weeks before the season started. And obviously, you guys know the weather's not ideal that time of year for here, but we're bundling up and going out there. But we need that. Look, this league is the facilities, and it's unbelievable. And so if we're going to compete and really talk about being a perennial NCAA tournament caliber team, then we need to have the resources to match what the rest of the league has, because our players, and that's the thing I'm probably the most proud of. If you go look at all the guys that are coming back that could have left. Well, they travel around all these facilities we're playing in. And our pitching staff's top 20 in the country. Do you think there's not a market at every school in our league? And so that's good right now as long as we continue to make progress. But at some point, that's going to be a different conversation, and rightfully so. You know, I think players want to feel like where they're at is as invested as the people they're competing against. And I think our community in town, I'll put us up against anybody in our league. I mean, I think this is an unbelievable place. Facility-wise, it's the worst. And so even with the improvements we've made so far, we have to get a place where the players can go 24-7 and get the work that they need in. And we need a place where a recruit can walk in and say, yeah, these guys are serious about baseball. And I think when you walk in some of the other facilities on our campus, you get that feeling. Obviously, when you walk in ours, you don't. I felt like when I first got here, we were selling air. You know, I really believe that. And now it's better, but it's still, we have a lot of work to do. And so we just have to continue to make progress in the product we're putting on the field. We have to continue to make progress on the facility and what we're doing. And we have to continue to make progress in the community and earn their trust and respect. That's one thing I think that a lot of people make a mistake of as coaches. You think that, well, I'm the head coach and this is the program, and they need to do this. And man, I've always been on the deal, you have to earn it. And you have to go out and earn it. And a lot of times my night's just starting when our practice or games are over, and my morning's starting before I ever get to the office, and just constantly listening to people. I think sharing your vision and getting people excited is important, but listen to people. I always say when you get to a community and to a university that you're new to, they have all the answers. You don't. You have a plan, and you have to be able to, you can't be rigid. You have to be able to adapt and adjust that plan. But the people that are in this community were here before I got here. The people that have been a part of this athletic department and this athletic programs, but especially baseball program, they were here before me. And so listen to them. They have a lot of the answers, and I think we did a good job with them. Then articulate kind of what your vision is, and then show growth and progress, and then gratitude. You know, I think gratitude, it takes everybody. And I said it when I got here, and I think people probably liked what it sounded like, but I mean it. It takes everybody. If you're going to do this, I've been fortunate to have a lot of success in this industry, and you don't ever do anything by yourself. And so my assistant coaches, the players, the community, everybody that works at our place, like, it takes everybody to get this thing to where you're trying to get it to.
And it's funny, like, where progress can come from. I remember one of our first, you know, conversations sitting around the table about how to make that better. It seems like such a small thing, but it's not in terms of impact. Just letting kids keep the foul ball they chase down. And that's expensive. Like, I mean, that's somebody's got to pay for those baseballs. But that's a small thing that, in the grand scheme of things, that makes a big impact.
Yeah, and I learned that trial and error. You know, look, you see the amount of kids that were showing up at the end of the game and the amount of autographs our guys were signing. And so if you don't think that adds value to the players' experience, you're crazy. That's a big deal to the players. But more importantly, it's a big deal to those kids that are going to grow up here, that maybe they're going to grow up wanting to play at Arkansas State, and that's powerful. And our kids engaging them and letting them on the field. Before, it was like kids come on the field on certain days, and I want those kids there. I want them out on the field. I want them as a part of our program. I want families to have their kids nagging them to come to the game. And if they can take a baseball home and their kids' autographs on them and sit in their bedroom, that does start a connection. And that's what you want. That's when it becomes, it's bigger than just the wins and losses. You know, every little kid that grows up around here, I want them dreaming of playing baseball at Arkansas State, and we have to earn that. And I think that was step one, by as little as that is, because we've done it before. And I don't want some kid getting his baseball and getting a snow cone. I want that kid taking that baseball home and knowing he got it at an Arkansas State game, and his buddies coming to his house saying, where'd you get that from? And, hey, can he come with us to the next game? And then it starts to multiply, and that's what you want.
Family enjoying it here?
Yeah, my son has excelled, my wife. People have asked before, like, what's the key to success? I always say her 22 years and the most unselfish, selfless person in the world. I got home for about 6 hours, and then I was on the road last night and got home about 1 a.m. And it never just, this is what it takes, and my family's excelling. I'm telling you, this is a great community to live in. I've lived everywhere. I really have. And I think we're as happy living here as anywhere we've ever lived. And that's saying something, coming from South Louisiana, where we had tremendous relationships. And my son's excelled. I think the schools here are great. The community's great. The way they've accepted my family and made them feel a part of their community. And we haven't even been here for a year. And my son is, I mean, he's excelling. And my wife is as happy as I've ever seen her. So I'm really proud of that.
You probably heard this story, but I heard it coming out of the Troy series. Someone told me that won the Sunday game and seeing how the other games played out, and they went to your wife was standing there, and they went and said, more or less ask her, what's the magic number? What we got to do here? You know, because at that point it was down to one. Yeah, how many games do we got to win next week to get in? And before she could answer, your son said, we got to win all of them.
Oh, so yeah.
I was like, well, I know whose kid that is.
Yeah, he's tough. He told me after the tournament when we lost, I got back to the hotel room, and obviously he's upset the season's over. It's not like what he hangs his hat on, but he said, Dad, like, I like it a lot better when we win the whole thing. And I'm like, I got you, bud. We're working on it. Like, I said, I got you. I appreciate that you give me that. I get no slack at home. You know, you think questions that somebody in the media could ask you or whatever. Like, I don't get drilled by anybody as much as Dylan. I get home and he wants to know, like, I mean, how do we screw that game up tonight? You know, he wants to know why, or like, when you get back. But he gets invested in it, and it's awesome. He doesn't know another life. He doesn't know his whole life. This is what it's been. And so he's at that age now where he knows and he's into it. So it's a lot of fun to get to see how invested he is as well.
Well, it's a lot of fun just seeing how year one is played out and seeing how you're developing this thing and everybody's starting to just buy in, and fun to see excitement around A-State baseball. So appreciate you. It's been fun this year, but can't wait for an even more fun 2026.
Yeah, no doubt. I appreciate y'all. I appreciate everybody supporting us, and obviously excited for what's to come next.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs, and most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Let's talk track and field. We talked about it last week on this program. We expected several of our track and field athletes to be going to the NCAA West prelims this week, and it turns out they are. And in fact, one of our athletes has already secured a bid to compete in the decathlon at the NCAA Outdoor Championships in Eugene, Oregon, coming up on June 11th and 12th. That's Colby Eddowes. Colby, a former guest of the program, and he will now be the first A-State decathlete to compete at Outdoor Nationals since 2008. Pretty cool accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Now, before all that happens in Eugene, the West prelims are being held this week in College Station starting on Wednesday. Now, Colby's going to be there. He's competing in the 110-meter hurdles, so he's trying to qualify for something else, as if the decathlon's not enough to keep you busy.
Matt Vining, one of the assistants, was talking with me the other night and talking about him doing this, which he described as insane. But he said, hey, let's go.
Noah Isaiah will be there competing in the hammer throw. Bradley Gelmert and John Carswell will be in the men's pole vault. Carly Pujol in the women's pole vault. Michelle Ogbemudia in the shot put. And Jacob Pyatt will compete in the 5,000 meters. So track and field well represented at the West prelims. Anything else we need to talk about before we get out of here?
You may have seen over the course of last week, information came out where renewals are live now.
Yeah.
For volleyball and men's and women's basketball. The kind of the common theme of all three of those sports is they have a banner they're going to drop at the start of the season. Each of them do. So renewals, season ticket renewals are open for those. And, you know, less than 24 hours after that came out, I saw people coming in wanting to get those renewals done. Our folks are saying that, especially with women's basketball, that there were a lot of people calling, already making new season ticket purchases that didn't have them. People buying courtside seats that didn't have them. So happy to hear that. Some buy-in to what Coach Des and that bunch did. And you see the job she did finishing out their roster as well over the last few weeks. And I saw her the other day, and she's excited.
Should be.
Yeah. So you don't got to wait. You can get your volleyball and men's and women's basketball tickets now.
Fun program. Certainly hope everybody had a great Memorial Day. Appreciate Mike Silva coming in and talking with us today. Hopefully we get a lot more good stuff to talk about next week on our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.